It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Game Over Winnipeg. My name is Brady. I will be one of your hosts here tonight on another night where the Winnipeg Jets come away with a W. I hope you guys are feeling well. The Winnipeg Jets are undefeated this year. They have not lost a game. They have not even lost in overtime this year. That was a really interesting game for sure. And first of all, you know, of course, happy holidays is all. I hope you guys all enjoyed your New Year's celebrations. I hope you guys all had lots of fun and stayed safe. But man, I was excited actually to get back here. The Winnipeg Jets facing off against the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight. We get to see a great matchup. We finally get to see the best goalie in the world in Bell MTS place facing off against Andrei Vasilevskiy and the Tampa Bay Lightning. As Kishore says in the chat, new year, same Jets. Take that how you want, and whether you I'm not sure if he's alluding to a bit of a wishy-washy game where, you know, certain parts were really, really good and certain parts you're sitting there going, is this the team that is, you know, has been fighting for first place in the Central all year, or just on a pure base level of, you know, the Jets winning, continuing their win streak. I believe they're at now as I think they said on the broadcast right near the end, a franchise. Record. Jeez. A franchise record where the Winnipeg Jets now have points in 9 games straight. That's pretty good if you ask me. And it's a great way to start off 2024 for the Jets. Although this game definitely has a lot of question marks in it. But at the end of the day, just win, baby, just like Kishore says in the chat. Winning, of course, is the most important thing. The process as we get there, you know, was there are certain parts of this game where I look at and I'm like, this stretch of 10, 15 minutes, great, fantastic. Some of the best hockey the Jets have played. And parts of this game where I am sitting here going, this is my team. Where did these guys come from? And you know what? First off, before we even get into the game, the Lightning, of course, one of the few teams where the Jets are going to be playing in the next little bit that are, you know, not a decent team, but like, you know, a team where you go, you circle that on the schedule and go, okay, like this is going to be a good matchup. Obviously, they're not exactly the dynasty Tampa Bay Lightning from a couple of years ago, but they still do have a lot of their core pieces still intact. And tonight they were running 13 forwards and 5 defense because of injuries and cap stuff. So that was something I was really hoping the Jets would be able to feast upon. And I actually haven't even decided if I think that they did or not. I would say probably not, especially considering there's a certain line that we're going to have to talk about. We're going to have a little discussion about because they've kind of fallen off. But all in all, a really fun and interesting game all around. And you know what? Let's just hop into it. I think this is one of those games I feel like needs to be taken a little bit in, you know, as the game went on. And I think each period kind of brings up certain things that I want to talk about. So we're just going to kind of go through the motions of the game. So starting off, the Jets have a bad start. This is not new for the Jets. I wouldn't say that they're, you know, always a bad start team, but it's definitely something we need to worry about, because when they don't start well, it can be tough. Luckily, Hellebuck bailed them out pretty early on with a couple good saves, but not too big of a deal. All of that goes until Adam Lowry apparently high sticks Darren Radish. Yes, Darren Radish. And of course the replay reveals that it was in fact, Philip Myers who did, a high stick Radish in the face, and Lowry, you know, I kind of wish Lowry made a bit more of a stink about it. You know, I know they were talking on the broadcast saying stuff like, you know, oh, you know, good sportsmanship to just go off the ice, not complain about it. But like, you're the captain. You're allowed to talk to the refs. You're allowed to go up to him and go, hey, man, I didn't touch him. Listen, they're not going to usually call that back. I think I remember one time where in the past where the NHL, where refs like looked up and saw it on the Jumbotron and just went, ooh, we got that wrong, and changed it. But that is not par for the course. This is just an unfortunate one. And you know what? It sucks. And I hate that I'm about to say this, but like, if we're going to go, you know, refs on one end of the spectrum or not on the other end of the spectrum, I'd rather them be more apt to calling calls than not calling them. But unfortunately this one is tough. And also what makes it even tougher is that, like, I want to say like a minute before Appleton got high sticked and no call, nothing. Again, not a big deal. You can't live and die by the refs. It is what it is. But obviously refs have been a big topic of discussion, especially today, with all the Ryan Hartman stuff going on, which I will talk about at the end of the show. We have to talk about a game first, but if you follow me on Twitter, you've seen that I've been losing my mind over the Ryan Hartman stuff. But anyways, this was the Lowry ghost penalty was very unfortunate, because of course when it's a goal or when it's a penalty like that, of course it's going to go in the worst way possible. Leads right to Stamkos getting a beautiful one-timer. I mean, that's his bread and butter. That's what he does on the power play. It's him and Ovechkin in that spot. What can you do? We can all sit here and go, you know, the power play needs to be better, which is something I have a bit of a blind spot, not necessarily a blind spot too, but it's just something where I'm not as good at assessing, you know, what needs to be fixed on the PK. But unfortunately, having no Lowry out there is also going to be pretty tough on you in order to, you know, try and stop one of the better power plays in the league from scoring. But all in all, this first period was rough for at least a good chunk of it. Like, I can't even think of like one or two like chances the Jets got. The puck management was really, really bad early on, especially by that top line, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. But in general, the first period, like I can remember maybe one chance where like Nino kind of walked in on the side and got like a pretty standard whatever shot, but it only stuck out to me because the Jets had no chances. The second line seemed to be buzzing at least early on in the game. They felt like the one line, other than obviously the fourth line, who was creating zone time as well as getting chances and also moving the puck into dangerous spots in the slot. So I really liked what they had going on to the start, but oh my goodness, what has happened to our Globetrotter line? What happened? We had the best line in hockey for like, I don't know, 4 or 5 games straight. And obviously we knew that having like an 80% expected goal share was not sustainable. We know that that was not sustainable. But I just sit here and I look and I go, what is happening? From all ends, this line was not working today, and they haven't really been great for 1 or 2 games now, I want to say. I don't know what happened. It just feels like the skills that each of the players are providing. One thing that is a big issue, I will say, is Nikolaj Ehlers and his puck management is really, really difficult when you don't have guys like Vlad Nemestikov, for example, on his line who are more of the worker type, whereas, you know, Mark Scheifele, you know, he'll go into the corners, he'll try and you know, get the puck, but his goal is to get the puck and like make like a move to go through a player rather than just straight up going into the corner, bodying a guy and getting body position on the puck and skating it out that way. Gabe Vilardi is able to do that, but unfortunately, Gabe Vilardi can't be everywhere on the ice. And hey, he's only played, what, like 10 games with Nikolaj Ehlers in his entire career now. So I can't fault him for not knowing exactly what's going on in Ehlers' head. And I don't know what's going on in his head either. But at the same time, when it comes to, you know, Mark Scheifele, he's kind of reverting back to his older ways in regards to, you know, like I remember there's one specific moment in the first period where he kind of he tried to cheat for offense, which sometimes is fine and sometimes it works. But we're down, and we're down a goal. So I don't blame him for that. It's just what it results in. And this is the one where he tries to chip it past the defender. He can't get past him. And it seems like everyone on the Jets was like, all right, guys, we're all going out now. Because the Tampa defenseman just passes it to Michael Acemont. I almost said Mikey, Michael Acemont, who has like all the time in the world in front of the net. Luckily isn't able to do anything with it. But boy, oh boy, I was scared. It was not good. But, anyways, returning back to that first line. It just feels like everything that was clicking is gone. Vilardi's still able to do his thing in tight, but he's also a player where it feels like he kind of needs the play to be moved into the zone for him. And it felt like that line just was not able to create any zone time, was not able to create any chances. It felt like even the times that they were in the zone and had the puck, they were just kind of passing it around until they got picked off, and they just weren't really able to do anything whatsoever. So that was really frustrating. We'll talk a little bit in the third period, because eventually the blender was taken out, which was probably for the best. But I remember looking on Money Puck, and after the first period, like, it was, you know, every other line for the Jets 70 and up, and the Ehlers Scheifele Vilardi line was like 10%, maybe even less than that, expected goal share for the first period. And also, newsflash, that continued throughout the second period, as well as not in the third period, considering they did get broken up, but they got absolutely dominated tonight. Bad game for them. I hope, if the Jets do end up going back to it, which we'll have that conversation near the third period part, I'd be willing to give them a shot again, that's for sure, but it is difficult for sure. But regardless, that kind of caps off the first period. The end of the period was the funny delay a game penalty, which was pretty interesting. I'm surprised that, obviously I'm not surprised that Tampa would argue it that heavily, but I mean, okay. So this is obviously what happens. One of the defenders on the Lightning tries to, dish it out of the zone, and it ends up going out of play. And obviously if it lands in the bench, it's not a penalty for a delay game. If it goes over the boards and behind the bench, and into the crowd, it is of course a delay of game penalty. What happens is Steven Stamkos, just throws his stick up, probably out of just instinct, out of reflex, and ends up knocking the puck down. So I actually have never seen this happen in a game where the puck was definitely going out, at least in my opinion. It looked like the trajectory going straight out. But I've never seen this happen where the refs have to kind of decide if it was in fact going out. But also at the same time, I'm kind of sitting here going, okay, so either we say that it was going out or it wasn't going out based on whatever. But Stamkos also technically plays the puck while he's not while he's in the bench, which is a penalty. You're not allowed to do that. It would be an extra skater or a delay a game penalty. I'm not 100% sure exactly what the penalty would be. All I know is that you are not allowed to play the puck from inside the bench. It's interference. You have to have two feet on the ice in order to be a part of the play. And of course he is not. It's the same type of penalty. If you've ever seen a penalty called when like a guy is coming out of the penalty box and like touches the puck before stepping onto the ice, I guess that would kind of work itself out to be the same thing. Anyways, regardless, pretty silly thing to happen, but the Jets get 17 seconds on the power play before the period ends. And would you look at that? When there's only 17 seconds, the Jets are able to almost create a beautiful chance where they win the draw. It goes back to Ehlers, who's on the right wall, passes it up top, who it was Shifley at that time, was at the top. Throws it over to the left wall where Josh Morrissey is, and he just makes a beautiful pass in through the crease where Gabe Vilardi potentially could have got a stick on it. Unfortunately, it does go right back through. But Nikolai Ehlers also gathers the puck. And this is, you know, I'm probably not going to talk too much about power play today because I've kind of talked about power play a ton. But hey, this just goes to show that you can decide to shoot the puck early and often on your power play and then fight to try and get the puck back. You don't need to be so worried that the second you shoot the puck, that that's the only chance you're going to get. Anyways, we'll can it there. Shots were 11-7. Not a great start for the Jets. They ended up figuring it out kind of at the 6 or 7 minute mark, or 5 minute mark. I'm not even sure when it was, but they did not look dangerous whatsoever. However, they were pretty good at keeping, the Lightning away from the big, the super dangerous spots. But of course, you go into the break down 1-0. Moving on to the second period, I mean, this is a really interesting period. Again, the Jets start off with their power play. It sucks. I've already spoken the issues on that. Entries, puck retrievals. There was literally, it was like they didn't have a power play even for the minute 45 or whatever they had, minute 40. But yeah, and this period for me is when kind of the game opened up a little bit. And of course, this is the period that the Jets do end up scoring two of their goals. And I have to praise Pionk so much on this goal, because while it just seems like it is just a tip in goal, this is like, it was so perfect. If you watch the replay of this, you can see Pionk gesturing for the slap pass from Brendan Dillon for like a good second or two. I also have to give some big, big ups to the fourth line, because man, where would we be right now if the Jets fourth line wasn't going? Like, I feel like it's been every single game for the past 3 to 4 games, basically whenever kind of the top line stopped being super heavy hitters, that they've been chipping in. Like, they have been so important for the Jets to keep this pace that they've had all throughout December. I mean, they went 10-1-2 in December. Now with this win here, 11-1-2. And the fourth line has been such an important piece of that. They are constantly getting zone entries for the Jets, creating time where they are in the offensive zone. But also, like, on top of that, like, they're getting chances. Like, tonight, how many times did AJF, like, get a really decently good chance to score? Like, I remember there was one, I think it was in the third period, I want to say. No, it was right near the end of this period. Sorry, I do have it in my notes. The one where they're cycling around and AJF kind of bumps off, like almost like how you would watch like the power play do a pass to the bumper and gets a shot right in the slot. Like, so helpful, so useful. And coming back to the Pionk, this happens because Morgan Barron is supporting Neil Pionk. Neil Pionk is getting pressured on the right side of the zone by the Tampa defense. Obviously, you have Brendan Dillon on his side. He's kind of in the middle area, but that's a really dangerous and tough pass to make, especially when you're being pressured. The easiest, simplest thing to do is just to dump it back into the corner, hope that your guys get it. But at the same time, you don't want to always just give the puck away. And what Morgan Barron does here is he provides a close support for Neil Pionk, allows him to make a nice, simple 5-foot pass, dish it off, dish the pressure off of him. And what Morgan Barron does then takes the open ice that he has, circles around, passes it over to Brendan Dillon, and Neil Pionk creeping through the weeds. He saw this as his opportunity. He knew exactly what he had to do. It's great. I'm usually not a huge proponent of the behind the net cam, but they showed such a great angle just to show how Pionk just slowly slides away from dishing the puck off and going, no, pay attention to them, and just kind of fades into the background and then goes, oh, I have a lane right in the middle. And as soon as he starts darting to the middle, you see him immediately with his stick. You can tell by the way he's holding it. He's going, Dilly, Dilly, come on, give me a slap pass right now. I got the perfect spot for this tip. And makes no mistake, Brendan Dillon, fantastic slap pass. Neil Pionk, perfect tip. Perfect tip. So, so good. Again, the fourth line, huge on this. Neil Pionk, great at acknowledging the opportunity he had to not take a, you know, a crazy, not just like try and, you know, blow the zone and try, not blow the zone, sorry, but try to, you know, get too many defense deep. He knew he had Barron as a cover. This was his chance to go into the middle, get an opportunity. Brendan Dillon doesn't miss the slap pass. Fantastic. 1-1. Things are looking a little bit up, but I'll be honest with you, still not the best hockey the Jets have played. Play continues on. The other notable moments I can remember from here was Appleton getting absolutely seatbelt hooked by Victor Hedman. No call, of course. Whatever. Who it is, it is what it is. We'll do our bitching about ref segment right at the end of the game. Don't worry. And player safety, mainly player safety. There's that, as well as there's the AJF and Barron get like that 2-on-0 chance where I just kind of wish AJF would have just shot the puck rather than making a really late pass to Barron. It is what it is. They're fourth liners for a reason. They're not supposed to be the impact guys, despite the fact that they are. And then the second line comes through for the Winnipeg Jets and scores a goal exactly how I would like to say, or how I would imagine Rick Bowness draws up his goals. This goal happens because this second line was in the opposing zone for 30, 40 seconds. You can tell that Tampa was tired, so tired here. And hey, Alex Iafallo is the beneficiary of this one to his own work that he does on the wall. Vlad Nemeskov in behind the net, pushes it over to Alex Iafallo, who's a little bit further up the wall. He's fighting off a Tampa defender, finds the puck, is able to seize Cole Perfetti in the middle, makes a nice little push pass through his legs. Cole Perfetti realizes he's got no help in regards to someone across the ice in order to pass to. The defensemen that are in the zone aren't really in great positions to make a clean and safe pass to. So what does he do? He just walks in, tries to rip the shot. Vasilevskiy makes a big pad save. And Alex Iafallo, who not only starts this play, of course, with Vlad Nemeskov, but starts the play by moving it out to Cole Perfetti, joins back in on the play immediately right after, picks up the rebound and scores just the right type of goal. Again, we've been harping on how the first line hasn't been great. And you want to know why? It's because they've been playing skilled hockey, and it hasn't been working when they've played against teams like the Wild, who like to be dirty and get in people's way. I still think that Tampa is a pretty good team, despite the fact that they're in a wild card race right now. I think that just more or less says about how good the Atlantic is. Like this type of goal is the type of goal I was saying it on the last stream, the Lowry goal from the Wild game. The Jets need to be able to create these greasier goals, because we're not going to get the globetrotter hockey from that top line every game. And I think that's honestly the key to fixing that top line, is just simplifying it. Like they're just trying too hard to do everything perfectly, that they're not allowing themselves to get the right shots. I'm supposed to be talking about the second line. Sorry, I keep always wanting to talk about the first line, because they've been frustrating but also really good in the past. So you're like, how can we get back to it, you know? Regardless, just a fantastic goal. Great. Good on the Jets here. And then basically the Jets do something that they've done a lot recently. And I know, I remember seeing Kishore here in the chat here. He joined me for the Boston game. And one of the things that he pointed out in that Boston game was that the Jets were able to go like, I don't know, however long, like 15 minutes probably, without allowing a shot. And this is kind of what the Jets did again today. You know, this again, to conclude kind of the you know, the second period, nothing really important, but what happens is the Jets get in front and they finally get their lead that they need. and they let the defense kind of roll with it. At around the 15 minute point of the second period, the Lightning weren't able to get anything at all. If you look at the money puck chart, right around the 15 minute mark of the second period, you can see that the offense, the expected goals, stops dead in its tracks right around this moment here, and it's pretty much all Winnipeg Jets from there. Up until this point, they were getting absolutely schlocked. The Jets are where that is. Excuse me. In expected goals, but there really is something to be said about how this team is able to lock down games. I know that we've had moments where we're unable to, you know, hold like a shutout for Hellebuck. Also, we have got to stop doing the wave, guys. It is a guaranteed goal against. What is going on, guys? You do that the last 10 seconds, then I'm happy. Regardless, Hellebuck still had a 941 tonight. I shouldn't be complaining. But this is really something that has to be said about this team, is that they have become so, so good at locking games down. Like, I don't know, maybe someone in the chat can remind me the last time that the Jets like blew a lead. I can't remember when that would have been, at least not on the spot at the moment. But like, I think that the Lightning didn't get any like actual chances until probably the like last 5-7 minutes of the third period. Like, especially, I'm pretty sure also the Jets had penalties in that time too. Oh wait, no, the Jets have power plays. Never mind. Oops. But they did have penalties at the end of the second period too. Regardless, Toninato's hold. Anyways, the point is, though, the Winnipeg Jets have become very, very good at locking down their games. I know that the Lightning do end up getting a late goal. Of course, that is a power play goal. But tonight at 5v5, no goals against. That is good. Very, very good. The best 5-on-5 team in the league. I'm just going to say it, guys. Playoffs is mostly played at 5v5. I mean, every hockey game is mostly played at 5v5. But playoffs, they put the whistles away. And if the Jets have, like, again, if they can improve even minorly at their PK and their power play, easy peasy. Even if they don't, like I said, those moments, while they do, you know, they are very important, of course. I think the Jets can even get away with how their power play is doing now and go on a run. Like, this team, if they continue to play the way that they have been, at least in regards to locking games down, at least in regards to, you know, coming back from games. Again, they were down 1-0 in this game, and they didn't let that bother them. I know it's only a 1-0 lead, but again, a win's a win, and the Jets got there. You know, if you really want to do the whole money puck deserve to win a meter thing, we're sitting at about 50-50 right now. Like, this was a great game by the Jets. There was a lot of moments where the Lightning took over and the Jets did what they could do to just, you know, to get through those moments. But that's why you have a guy like Connor Hellebuck. Like, he was great tonight. And there were a couple big saves. I'm trying to remember exactly which one. There was one where the Lightning player, oh God, I can't remember it now. I want to see my notes. Give me one moment. Oh, at the start of the second period, the one where Pionk gives a complete pizza over to the Lightning player. I can't remember who it was. He walks in and Hellebuck bails him out. That's just one of many that I can think of tonight. The Jets have a bit of everything. It is truly, truly interesting and truly fun to be a fan of this team, despite that, you know, it's not always fun the entire game. But when the Jets are down, they are usually able to at least try to mount a comeback. That's one of the beauties about having depth, is that when your top line isn't able to do it for you, your bottom two lines come through. But hey, that kind of concludes the second period chat. Again, I'm just kind of going through it as is. Third period starts, and this is when we get the blender. So we finally get a change to that top line. We just end up switching the centerman. Scheifele ends up going with Alex Iafallo and Cole Perfetti, as well as Nikolai Ehlers going and Vilardi going with Vlad Nemestikov. As far as this change goes, I think that this is a great in-game change and could be a decent one if they decide to go back to trying that Globetrotter top line and it just doesn't work again, then I actually think that these are not terrible lines to go with. I think that Cole Perfetti is a great player to have with Mark Scheifele, because I actually think that their games are very similar. I would say Perfetti's a little bit closer on the playmaking side of things, rather than Scheifele is a bit closer to the goal scoring with, you know, some playmaking edge. I'm just hoping that this will create on that line, if they stick with this line with Iafallo, Perfetti and Scheifele, I'm just hoping that this will create a scenario that encourages Scheifele to shoot a lot more, because he has a great shot and he just has not been using it this year. Putting a playmaker like Cole Perfetti with him, great. Alex Iafallo, again, he's just kind of your lunch pail, go to work, get in the corner, dig the puck out kind of guy for that line. And he's been decently hot as of late, so why not give him the bump? Give him a shot. He's also pretty decent defensively, so not my favorite player on the Jets, but definitely a useful piece to be put in that spot. And then, you know, going back to the Vilardi, Ehlers, Nemeskov line, that's here's the thing. Like, I think Nikolai Ehlers really is the key in all this, because he almost like kind of how like. And I don't want to make this comparison. I don't want anyone to take me out of context here, but almost like how you can't necessarily just put any player with Connor McDavid because they need to be able to keep up with them. And I feel like Vlad Nemeskov, not necessarily speed wise, but thinking wise, is able to keep up with Nikolai Ehlers, and that he's been really instrumental in getting the best out of Ehlers in regards to when they were playing the, you know, the Vlad Ehlers and Perfetti line was together, as well as all the other times where it just felt like we couldn't find someone for Ehlers to play with. Vlad Nemeskov has come in and kind of been that guy, kind of just a stable center who is just going to do exactly what he does all the time. He's reliable. He's consistent. And I think that's what Nick needs with him, as well as someone who's consistent, but also on his level in regards to how they're thinking and how they're seeing the game. And then, of course, Vilardi, he's your net front guy. He's the guy who, when Nikolai Ehlers is skating around, you know, causing chaos, skating around the perimeter and eventually floats a shot in, you know, Vilardi is the big body who's there to either put a tip on, get the rebound, or use his hands in front in order to, you know, deke out the goalie, which he almost did in the on the power play in the third period. So I definitely think that these lines have potential, but I still think that the magic that we saw with the Ehlers, Scheifele, and Vilardi line needs to be revisited. We can't just get rid of it just straight up like this. I think that it's one of those things where you have to sit those guys down and just figure out, try to get them all on the same level, you know, at least thought wise. But as I said, kind of the game continues on. The Jets do really, really well at keeping the shots low. I remember the amount of times I kept looking up and seeing the shots for the Lightning staying at 25 was incredible for a very long time, or eventually to 26, of course. But yeah, anyways, garbage time happens. You know, we get the Ehlers goal where, you know, Vlad blocks the outlet pass from Vasilevsky. And hey, kudos to Vlad for both reading where the pass was going, but also at the same time, not just like freaking out and shooting the puck immediately, but having the like poise to just like stop, turn around, see Ehlers is wide open in the slot and go, hey, you probably have a better angle for the shot here. You take this. Ehlers rips a five-hole. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Happy with that one. Morgan Barron gets an easy empty net goal. And then, of course, with 36 seconds left, Kucherov gets his power play goal. And there you have it, guys. The Winnipeg Jets undefeated in 2024. Don't go anywhere just yet, because I do want to talk a little about player safety. But, hey, a win's a win. Wasn't the prettiest game for sure by the Jets. Definitely have some things that need to be improved. Still got to work on the power play. Still got to work on the PK. But at the end of the day, Connor Hellebuck is an animal, is the best goalie in the world, obviously. The Jets have incredible depth. The defense were, you know, playing very, very well today, in my opinion. I thought there was not a single person on that decor where I was like, you know, had this exact moment where it was terrible. I mean, maybe I guess Pionk, but he also had a great moment to score. So he's off the hook. but yeah, that wraps the game at least. Before we finish off here, guys, we have to talk a little bit about Ryan Hartman. Ryan Hartman, you may ask, if you're not aware, player for the Minnesota Wild, dirty player also for the Minnesota Wild. Today he did in fact get fined $4,427, for high sticking Cole Perfetti. And then right after that happens, we get an interview with Cole Perfetti just after their morning skate, where Cole Perfetti mentions the fact that he was on mic that game, and while he was on mic, not only did he speak to Ryan Hartman about it, but Ryan Hartman admitted to him and said, yeah, that was on purpose, that was intentional. So then Jets Twitter goes into a crazy spree of what the hell is going on. And this is when Jeff Merrick comes out and mentions the fact that, here, this is the tweet he had. Further note on the Hartman situation: in exchange for players agreeing to wear mics, none of the audio captured can be used in connection with disciplinary action. This goes back to the 2005 agreement. Listen, a rule's a rule. That is what it is. I think that when it comes to policies like this, it's never, I don't know how I feel about this in regards to what needs to be changed on it, if it needs to be changed or not. But at the end of the day, I think this is a good time for us to have this discussion, because we're at a time where, things get policed in the game. We have mics everywhere in the arena, but sometimes we can't pick up everything. But we also want to make sure that, players are not saying horrible, terrible things to each other. If you remember a couple of years ago, when the whole Morgan Riley saga went down, where everyone was arguing whether he said that or he said something a little more offensive. Maybe it would be nice to be able to go in and check the audio if a player happened to be wearing a mic and confirm something. Or in an example like this, where, maybe we don't make the case saying that he should be suspended because he said this thing specifically. But if Cole Perfetti goes up to the disciplinary committee and is like, hey, I'm the one who got hurt, injured by this. I'm the one who had to get the stitches in my face. And he told me it was he told me he was doing it on purpose. At a certain point, we have to have this conversation of what is best for the game. What is best for the game? And I'm not the one to determine that. This is just for everyone to ponder, think about as we move forward, as our sport constantly evolves, as we keep tinkering with the rules. Because at the end of the day, it sucks. It really does, because Ryan Hartman is a dirty player. And this is not news to anyone. I want everyone now to erase the intention part from their brain, at least the microphone moment where Cole Perfetti's talking about it. Let's just talk about the high stick as a whole. So if you want to see the clip, it's on my Twitter. I unfortunately cannot show it to you guys on the show here at NHL Chunky. Go check it out. It's probably buried under a bunch of tweets about how Ryan Hartman sucks. But just go to my thing, go to the media, look through it. But the point is that if you're watching this, I truly wanted to try and put myself in the position of player safety. A department which has notably been terrible for a while. I still cannot believe the fact that we have a former enforcer, George Parros, who currently has, is it a podcast? A clothing brand? I know he has a clothing brand called The Violent Gentleman, basically glorifying the violence in the sport. How that person is the head of the player safety committee. It just does not make sense to me. It just does not make any sense to me how this ended up being just a fine. I also want to let you guys know, Ryan Hartman, not even the most, not even the most well-paid player in the league. He makes, you know, his cap hit is 1.7 mil this year. His salary is $2 million. I'd love that, by the way. That'd be great. But this fine of $4,427 is less than half of a percent of his yearly salary. So just as just an example, let's just take like a random salary of a normal person who isn't an NHL player. Let's just say, for example, just for this thought process, let's just say $50,000 yearly. And let's just say that someone speeds. Everyone driving occasionally will speed. I think speeding is a good analogy for for having dirty hits, like crossing the line, because it's a thing where some people, I'm sure you all know someone out there who is a speed demon, constantly pushes the edge, constantly speeds when they drive, and you go, hey man, you're probably going to get caught with a couple speeding tickets. And there are some people who just, you know, very accidentally, sometimes in moments, accidentally speed and speed will go a little too fast. But the thing is, if say this person who has a $50,000 annual salary gets a speeding ticket, that is, let's just say like a $200 ticket, that is more out of that person's pocket than Ryan Hartman going up to Cole Perfetti on a faceoff draw saying, I did that on purpose, but literally intentionally premeditated as revenge, hitting someone in the face with a hockey stick. Like, I just need the league. I need player safety to think about this, because if you just watch this clip, Ryan Hartman does not try to win the faceoff. He does not. He puts his stick down and immediately just goes straight up at Cole Perfetti. It's a great thing that Cole Perfetti only had to get a couple stitches on his face. But, like, what was the point of this? This was the second game where, yes, I understand that Kirill Kaprizov got injured the game before. But, hey, you want to know how that this game starts? You want to know how that game started? With Adam Lowry and Pat Maroon fighting. In regards to the code, Lowry was the one who went up to Maroon and was like, hey man, let's get this over with so we can just play some hockey. And Maroon goes, got it, cool, let's do this. They you know, they have their whole fight thing, they do their thing. And yet for some reason, Ryan Hartman still has a score to settle. And what does he do? He goes after Cole Perfetti, a 19, I don't know. He's young and he's tiny. He is a small guy. Ryan Hartman goes after just one of the players that like was not even a part of this. Again, it was Brendan Dillon who was the one who injured Kirill Kaprizov off of a standard 2-minute cross-checking penalty, which should technically be elevated to a 5-minute penalty because he injured Kaprizov. But regardless, it's in the middle of play. It is what it is. I just don't understand how this makes sense to in Ryan Hartman's head. But then on top of that, your player safety, you're watching this. You can tell from this video that he does not. He turned 22 yesterday. Thank you, Superior CD. I appreciate that. You can tell from this video that he does not try to get the puck. He immediately goes for Cole Perfetti's head. Okay, so again, we know that now. So let's just assume that we are at least suspicious that he may have done this on purpose. Okay, let's look at the context of the game. Okay, so yesterday the Wild and Jets just played the night before. And we know that the tensions are high. And Ryan Hartman is no saint, guys. This is a player who, prior to this fine, was suspended 3 times, has been fined 6 times. You can make a highlight pack of Ryan Hartman just doing dirty things. He's the new age Matt Cook. He is. He's new age Matt Cook. And so it is just baffling to me. It is baffling to me how a department of the NHL titled player safety can look at this and just go, just give them a slap on the wrist, guys. Hey, you'll stop speeding, right? You'll stop speeding if we give you a $200 fine. No, you're just going to keep doing it until you get, you're going to keep trying to get away with it no matter what. So this is bullshit. It's terrible. I think we constantly have criticized player safety for many, many reasons. Obviously, I am very biased in this. Obviously, I am a Jets fan and I'm a Cole Perfetti fan. But all day I had to also battle Minnesota Wild fans coming in here saying he deserved it. That's the code. This and that. Well, they only did this because they didn't call a penalty on this. It's like, okay, well, if you want penalties called, if you want the right things to happen, you should be asking for Brendan Dillon to have gotten a 2 or 5 minute penalty on that play. And you should be asking for Ryan Hartman to be given a 5 minute major, kicked out of that game, and be at least suspended for one game. If you look back at Evgeny Malkin a couple years ago, where he swings his stick at a player and just brushes the side of their helmet, he gets a one game suspension. You want to know why? Because you don't intentionally swing your stick at a player's face. You don't do that. That is not a hockey play. I just don't understand how we constantly have these discussions on player safety, and we keep looking at the goon who's at the top deciding who gets what. We've seen inconsistencies left, right, and center. We've seen dirty plays happen without any recourse. Listen, the Jets are not perfect. Neil Pionk has kneed people in the past. Josh Morrissey cross-checked a Wild player to the face in the middle of the playoffs. And you know what happened? He got suspended for 2 games. And that was mid-play in the playoffs. He got suspended 2 playoff games, which is like essentially 4 games by the standard of 1 playoff game equals 2 playoff games and suspensions. It just doesn't make sense. We need more consistency. We need less of a conflict of interest for the people at the top of it. And at the end of the day, we need player safety. Anyways, that's my bit on Ryan Hartman. That guy sucks. He's going to keep sucking. I, by the end of his career, I'm sure he'll be suspended one more time and we'll have multiple more, fines levied on him, but it is what it is. That's hockey, baby. Toughen up. Anyways, regardless, we'll tone it back down. We'll bring it back to the Jets. As I said, a fantastic start to the year. I'm very glad Cole Perfetti only needed a couple stitches. Fun birthday for him, having, you know, the stitches in his lip. But anyways, at this moment here, guys, thank you all for tuning in with me. Please do like the stream if you guys are still here with me. We're going to have a couple banger shows coming up here. Liz will be taking over. I know we obviously have the Anaheim Ducks game coming up, which is going to be a gong show, considering the whole Ryan Strome thing. Don't you love that? Don't you love that the way that things are settled in this league is by teams playing each other and just going, hey, next time we play you guys, hell to pay, you know? But regardless, I hope you guys have yourselves a wonderful evening. I'm going to be off of the stream for probably a week and a bit now. I'm heading on vacation. So Liz will be here with you. I know Kishore, I think, is going to be joining her for the Ducks game. But other than that, the next game for the Winnipeg Jets is Thursday against the Sharks. And Liz will be coming with you guys with Elliot Russinholt. But anyways, have yourselves a wonderful evening. Follow me on Twitter at NHL Chunky. Follow at SDPN Sports. Make sure to subscribe to SDPN on YouTube here. We're at 99K subs. As soon as we get to 100K subs, we are partnered and we are able to do a lot more fun things with YouTube. So please do drop a sub. Have yourselves a wonderful evening. Thank you all for tuning in with me. Go Jets, go. I'll see you later.